Brilliant. Okay, well, we're on to day three. I noticed it took a bit longer for people to get in this morning. I'm sure that's probably the reason that worship ran over a little bit longer. But we're still starting on time.
We were moved by the Holy Spirit.
We were indeed. Most of us were moved, especially during heads and shoulders, knees and toes. Yes, we're on to day three. We're still talking about church growth. And just want to start with reference to Cafe Connect. We heard mention of Cafe Connect yesterday as one of the ways in which a church, one of the groups here at Holyford, are connecting with their local community. And Cafe Connect, this is a fantastic website, by the way, so if you're thinking about websites, want to get some good ideas, have a look at Old Wick Baptist Church, Cafe Connect, and that's their advert, and there's a whole page about Cafe Connect on the website. This is just from their front page. Advertised through Facebook. That was the link we were making yesterday. Using new technology to run something where people come together, you're advertising it through a Facebook page. Okay, today's book of the day is another Bob Jackson. Like I said, I'm not getting any commission. Oh, I'm not switched on. Oh. That might help. Do you want me to start again? If you missed any of that, let's see me afterwards. Right, that's better. Today's book of the day is The Road to Growth, which is subtitled Towards a Thriving Church. And it's by the same author who wrote Hope for the Church. So this is the one, and this one was written in 2005, I think. So again, 2005. Oh, it says it up there. Oh, I'm so organised. But, fresh from today's post, Mark's handed me some copies of this little booklet, which we have for free to give away. Someone made a comment on the Facebook page, was it? After we put up the details about session one. And these are a free gift for anyone that would like. We've got 10 copies. I think we'll just give them to the first 10 that would like to claim a copy. Is that fair? Yeah. But you can get some more if you think you'd like a copy. We can get hold of some more. I haven't had a chance to read through yet, because Mark's only just showed me this morning. But it's called Church Growth, and it's produced by GEAR, the Group for Evangelism and Renewal within the URC. So further details, grab a copy of that. Okay, where are we? Session three. You still full of energy? Yes. Well, there were only about two people saying yes, actually. Are you still full of energy?
Yes!
Good. Because we're going to carry on that theme that we introduced through the worship. Thank you, Mark and Melanie, for that. Really got hold of that theme. I'm using the title Nurturing and Sustaining. Nurturing and Sustaining. It is about learning. It is about developing. It is about a lifelong journey with God. But there's something about the word nurturing, isn't there, which I like. There's an element of nurturing which is about caring. It's about concern. It's more than just passing on knowledge. It's about nurturing to get the very best from someone or something. I won't go on about allotments again. I did that yesterday. But that sense of nurturing small plants to become bigger plants. Or nurturing children to become teenagers. Nurturing teenagers to become young adults. And there was a lovely comment in the worship, which I just wanted to pick up on, about how children teach us. Yes? It's not a one-way street. When we work with children and young people, we learn from them as we're trying to impart our knowledge with them. The reason I'm emphasising today all about nurturing and sustaining is because this report, you've seen it before, from anecdote to evidence, the evidence is out there that one of the key ingredients to help churches grow, or churches of any size, of any place, in any context, is being intentional in nurturing disciples. Being intentional in nurturing disciples. We need to unpack what that means, but this is where we're starting from. Intentional in nurturing disciples. In other words, it's not an accident that people grow in their understanding of their faith. It's something we're intentionally seeking to develop. Make sense? Yeah. I honestly think that a lot of what I'm going to say over this week, you've heard before. I honestly think, even if you haven't heard it, you believe it and you feel it. Because it's so obvious. In some respects, all of this stuff is so, so obvious. It's just good to have someone that's done the research and said, you know, it's not just a gut feeling. This is actually true. This is actually the experience of churches. So being intentional in nurturing disciples. Oh, I've been waiting for this moment. Do you remember I said I've got a very strange sense of humour? Yes? Now you're going to appreciate it even further. This is a short polar bears clip, voiceover by Lenny Henry. Yes, we all know the comedian Lenny Henry. And this is where the technology could all go wrong. So, let me first of all see if I can find the clip. It worked well in rehearsal. But that's what they always say, isn't it? And I'm only going to show you one clip, but there are actually five. This is the one called Shane's Career. And I want you, as you're watching it through, enjoy it, but think about the word encouragement. Who offers the most encouragement? Oh. Hang on. You can't see it, I can see it. There you go, you can see it. Right, two polar bears.
Not in focus.
Yeah, well, it might come better. And they're in a zoo.
Hang on.
You can't hear it, can you?
You should be able to hear it because.
Yes, if I plug this in, you'll be able to hear it.
We hope.
I could hear it on my machine. Okay, let's go back to the beginning. A very good place to start, someone once said. Shall we sing? No, let's not sing. Okay, from the beginning. Polar bears.
Oh, Mom, you know you're always saying I can be anything I want to be.
Yeah.
Well, look, I was thinking I'd really got to be a journalist.
Well, when I said anything, love, I meant anything within reason.
I could call my column The View from the Zoo. No, wait. Zoo View. That's what snappy is. Zoo View. Phil, what's the point?
Gary, would it hurt you so much to encourage him once in a while?
I don't know where he gets his ideas from.
Of course you don't. You never had any drive or ambition, but I did.
What happened?
I met you, Gary. I met you.
Could I be really good at it?
I'm sure you would, but I think we have to look at a more realistic career option, like being, say, a zoo polar bear. It's got a lot to offer. Contact with the public, you can work from home, there's a tie to swing on.
Shane, I'm sorry I laughed before. Just so there's no hard feelings, I got you a little gift.
Oh, Gary.
Wow, no book! Just like a real journalist.
What the hell do you think you're doing?
Couldn't you do like you told me to?
Look like that, you idiot!
Well, it's been rumoured that Shane the polar bear may be heading for a career in journalism. Do you care to comment?
Shane, you are never going to be a journalist.
Never going to be a journalist. But you said you believed in me!
I do, but... Shane!
Don't even bother! That's the only one who really thinks I'm going to do it!
Shane, what are you doing?
I'm going to get a job on a paper, and then you'll see.
Shane, come back! We
Lucio and Claudia. How did your job on Tingar, Shane?
Well, darted in the high street and brought back ear strap to a Land Rover. So all things considered, could have gone a lot better. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to go and have a swing on the tyre.
Ever considered accountancy?
What?
Need to stop that because it's on repeat. That's all Melanie's fault. Stop. Okay. Back to the presentation. Okay, did you enjoy the clip?
Yes.
Did you pick up who was being the most encouraging? Well, I don't know. They both had their moments, didn't they? And Dad, thinking he was doing the right thing, goes out and gets the notepad and the pencil. No. Something realistic. And sometimes our young people, they need to go and explore and try something, don't they? They need to do it for themselves, find out whether it's going to work or not. In fact, we all do. And sometimes the going at, the trying something new, is the hardest thing. Sometimes all of us, doesn't matter how confident we appear, standing up here, wittering on, we all need that encouragement to step out of our comfort zone. To do something new. To go somewhere different. To experience worship in a different style, or a different place, or a different setting. And so encouragement is key. To go back to that reading from Hebrews. If I can find Hebrews. It's somewhere in the Bible, isn't it? Near the end. I've got it. Just after James. One here, James. 10, verse 19 to 25. In my Bible, it's in a section headed, A Call to Persevere. Not just about encouragement, but about persevering as well. Let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds. Let us not give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but let us encourage one another. And all the more as you see the day approaching. Let us encourage one another. And often when we're thinking about nurturing people in the faith, we think about the young. We think about our children's work and our work with young people. But it's also about new believers. Not everyone comes to faith before the age of 15. Not everyone comes to church knowing everything. In fact, it's one of the assumptions I never make. When someone walks in through the door, I don't assume they've ever been to a church before and understand what's going on. We're very careful in order of service that we try and help people through it. So if they've never been to our style of worship before, they know what's coming next. So we have an order of service that's printed out so you can see what's coming next. And that's a deliberate thing that recognises some people may be coming in for the first time. So nurturing young people, definitely important. But also those that are new believers. Not just about those at the beginning of their faith journey, though, is it? It's about people of every age and every stage of life. Learning is lifelong. Mark made that point earlier. And we should all have put our hands up when we were asked the question, have you been to a place of learning? Because the church is a place of learning. It's not its only function. When we gather to worship, we're not gathering simply to learn. We're gathering primarily to worship the God who has created us, the God who loves us, the God who nurtures and sustains us. But in doing so, we may learn. Learn more about our God. Learn more about our faith, our journey. So, you're all dozing off. So I want you to talk to the person near you. And if you're not near someone again, Susan, then move closer. It's because you've got abandoned, aren't you? You're abandoned. Always. Always abandoned. So, think about who... you may have many, many people on your journey. Think about the person who helped you on your journey. And then I'll share a little bit about someone special who helped me on my journey. So, how were you helped and who helped are the two questions. Just pick one person from all those millions of people. Talk to the person next to you. Off you go. 3 minutes. I can still hear your buzzing. If you haven't all had a chance to share your stories, perhaps later on. Are there one or two that would just like to share the name or the circumstance in which you were describing?
I went to Sunday school.
Yes, you went to Sunday school.
And when I was about 12, I decided I didn't like Sunday school. So although my mother thought I went to Sunday school, I went on the park. She discovered that I went on the park. So, got quite a telling off. And but one of my mother's neighbours said, why don't you let my Vera, that was her niece that she was bringing up, why don't you let her go to Prince Street with my niece, Vera? And Mum said, oh, yes, yes. And I've been there for 70 years.
Over 70 years. Right, excellent. So someone from your peer group to take you down. Brilliant, thank you.
I refer to Genesis part 1, which is just a list of names. It's not very interesting. But somebody says it's like Coronation Street. Somebody says Coronation Street is more interesting. Well, my reply to that is Coronation Street is a soap opera. I sooner wash myself with soap than view it on the Google box.
Good advice. That's very good advice. Anyone else want to share a bit about who introduced them or someone significant on their journey? Dennis?
Yes. I was just very encouraged by the fact that Muriel said, my church. Because it's something that I've said on more than one occasion, and I've been told off on more than one occasion. It's not my church, it's our church. But the fact remains, I think we all individually have a responsibility. And if, there are things perhaps that we have the skills to use that perhaps other people don't have, and we've all got different skills, and it's the joining together of all our skills that actually makes the whole church. So I say it's very encouraging that Muriel said my church.
Yes. And I'm sure the only reason someone would say hang about, of course, it's God's church.
Thank you.
It is God's church. David was about to say that, so I'll get in there first. But you're absolutely right. The sense in which I belong somewhere, yes, is when it becomes my church, isn't it? So I don't think you should always be afraid to say my church, as long as you acknowledge it is God's church. Susan.
If you don't have some sort of ownership to it, then you don't feel that you're attached to it.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. And the person or people that I was nurtured by when I was younger were my grandma and my mum and dad as well, but my grandma and my home church. I'm saying my home church. I haven't been a member for 20 odd years, but it's still my home church. And I still have a great fondness for it.
Hands up those that grew up in a church from when you were young, going along with your parents. Hands down.
No, not with parents.
Oh, not with parents. Oh, right. Oh, interesting. So that was from childhood. Put your hands up again. From childhood, those that have been going along to church. Hands down. Hands up anyone that came into church later on in life, say after the age of 20.
There's a question about this.
There is?
Because, I mean, I broke away from the church for quite a while.
You fell out and then you came back.
I came back later because I was encouraged by different people.
Brilliant, thank you. Thank you. So where were those different people? Where did you meet those different people?
In the world.
Through work or?
In the world a bit, but also in other churches and... in young people's things.
Thank you. Because clearly that's a different experience. I was going to say, one of the differences between Susie and I, we've been married 24 years, but our roots into the church are very different. I didn't go to church as a child. My parents never took us to church. I'm very pleased that they are now an active part of a local church. They came to faith after I did. But I was about 21, and I'll just share this briefly. I was about 21, I was partway through my degree course in chemical engineering. And the reason I'd chosen chemical engineering was I was very much one of Thatcher's children, everything to get money. Yeah? I was motivated. This was the area of engineering that would earn the most money. You can see it didn't quite work out because God had other plans. Because I've been a teacher and a minister. So not exactly quite as well paid as chemical engineering. Well, that's where I was. And my whole mindset was, I kind of had a vague idea of God, but I didn't go to church. I moved to Wembley for my industrial placement, and I was working with GEC in their research laboratory. I did specialist electroplating, so gold and silver electroplating, onto some weird materials like ceramics, which is quite difficult because they don't conduct electricity. Anyway, that aside. While I was there, I volunteered to help a local cub pack as their cub leader. I thought I was just going to go along as an assistant cub leader, but it turned out the cub leader had moved within the last 2 or 3 months, and I was all on my own. Apart from this lovely young lady who was called Michelle, and is still called Michelle, and she was part of the church, and her mum and dad were a very active part, Norman and Joe Croft. And without them, I probably wouldn't be stood here today. Because they introduced me to Fury, they took me into their home as part of the family. They were like a substitute mum and dad. And it was just a wonderful sense in which they nurtured me. They didn't force me to come along to church and worship, but they invited me. And I started going along, and it was just an average URC, small numbers, very small numbers, particularly in the evening service. And sometimes I'd be dozing off in the evening service. I have great memories of my eyes drooping after a long weekend. And but Betty Scopes was the minister there. Fantastic memories of Wembley Park. And I was only there for 1 year. But that was a hugely significant year. It was the year I discovered Fury. Melanie mentioned, which one was it? The Derby Connect? 87? Or something like that? 87. And Fury Assembly, which was here in the January. I think I just went to everything from that point because I was so encouraged by that one family. Now clearly, if the majority of you here grown up from childhood in church, you've had a different experience. The way you see church is different. I really dislike it when people say, here's a song from junior church that we'll all know. Because I'm going now, I won't. I might know it from Nat, but if it's one from your childhood, I probably won't know it, because it's not from my childhood. So we have to be very careful, don't we, with language. And I find myself slipping into the same pattern. Now, here's a familiar bit of scripture that you'll all know. And I realise, actually, I shouldn't be saying that, because there might be someone who's in church for the very first time. So this may be the first time you've heard this scripture passage. So we have to be careful about assuming things. But it is true. Lots of people come to faith when they are in their younger years. And that gives us a huge challenge, doesn't it? when we look round and see our children's work declining. But it's not just about the young. It's not just about the young. Growing old is mandatory. Growing up is optional. Thought you'd like that one. But actually, we all get older. But we don't stop learning. We shouldn't stop learning. And we shouldn't stop nurturing one another as disciples. What about others in different leadership roles? In some places, elders have been in place for years and 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 never had any training. Yes. There are courses available. This picture is of the front cover of a course which is an A4 size folder. I can't remember, 10 or 12 weeks or something. It's a course for elders. I must admit, I haven't used all of it. Our elders' meetings are so packed full of exciting things that we don't often get a chance to do training within that. But one of the things we've found has been particularly useful for encouraging and nurturing our elders is to have an elders' away day. And once a year, we go away on a Saturday and we spend time reflecting, sharing advice, tips, nurturing one another, and looking forward to where God is leading us. Discerning together as elders where God is leading us. And over the years, the average age of the eldership at Park has got lower and lower. When I first joined, it's 11 years ago, I was the youngest elder on the elders meeting. Thankfully now, there are three or four that are even younger. Although that might just be because I'm 10 years older. But it has brought the average age down. Yes. Encouraging new elders. And that's another thing to think about when people are selecting elders to serve in church. It might be a struggle. You might be looking around thinking, we haven't got anyone really young. You don't have to be really young, just a few years younger. But you need to find ways in which people will have the confidence to come forward and identify those giftings. Susie, what did you want to share? Yes. Yes, thank you. Sometimes when we look at the list of who can we nominate as an elder, we go, oh, well, they've done it before, they know what they're doing. Sometimes we need to think outside the box and say, who's there that with a little bit of nurturing could take on this role and grow into it? And what about this one? How do you encourage your minister? I'd like to buzz about this one. Think of ways in which you encourage your minister, if you have one. And if you haven't got one, what would you do? How do you encourage your minister? Have a quick buzz. Go, go, go. Let's have some sharing. Melanie, are you ready to run again? Ever ready. Born ready. As we say in our house. Born ready. Oh, at the front here. Right down the front. And then there. Right. Yes, we'll give you opposite. Go on, that's my first.
He's trying to keep you fit, isn't he? Willing to try things and fail.
So encouragement for the minister to try things. Yep. Not everything will be a fantastic success.
Tell them when they're doing something particularly well that you're appreciating, and find something nice to say even if they're not actually doing what you like. At least they're trying something, so try and be as uplifting and encouraging as you can, but particularly when they're doing things you like.
Yes, it's always good to have feedback that says, yeah, that went really well, because sometimes you put your heart and soul into a service and you walk out at the end, nobody says anything and you're left wondering, was that okay? To say which bit of the service you liked is much better than just saying all my service. So say which bits work for you. Okay.
Remember that we are the ministers.
Priesthood of all believers.
And secondly,
all ministers.
That even though a minister is regarded as a multitasker, he may not necessarily be multi-talented.
Indeed, indeed. Yes, bit of a jack of all trades, but we're not experts in every aspect. So we shouldn't expect that from any of our ministers. We've got another one.
Share your ideas and views on something with the minister, because you never know. You might, I'm not a minister, but I might somehow inspire them by looking at a totally different angle.
Where do you think all those good ideas come from? They come from you lot. Yeah? I don't think ministers work very well unless they grab all those good ideas that are around. We're all like magpies.
St. Martin's in Birmingham, they have what they call a meeting and a chat group every Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah.
To encourage people with young children to knit.
Yeah, knitting's becoming really popular at the moment. So that's a fantastic way to engage with people. How do we encourage our ministers?
Can say that we encourage our ministers to go and get nourishment for themselves to take up ministerial courses that are available to them, and don't expect them to be any different from you and me. They're not multi-talented.
You reminded me, there's a lovely time I was sharing in a sermon about how I'd had one of those weeks where the car had failed and this had gone wrong and that had gone wrong. And a lovely lady came up afterwards, I won't say it, and said to me, "Oh, do you know, I sometimes think you don't get those weeks. I'm really pleased to hear you have normal weeks like the rest of us." But yeah, I'm human. Then sometimes everything goes wrong. So yes, we are human. We're just like everyone else.
I think, I'd imagine that a minister's job is a very lonely job.
Can be.
And therefore, they need to encourage them to join the other ministers within an area or have a mentor or have somebody.
Absolutely.
I'm sure some of us have had situations where ministers have failed, if you like, that's the right word to use.
Yeah.
And things have gone wrong, and that's very, very tough. So to avoid that, if you like, I think we need backup.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That mutual support, finding someone you can talk to. And it doesn't always work within the same denomination, because everyone knows everyone. Sometimes it works better to find someone outside of your denomination. David, do you want to follow on to that?
Well, exactly to that. When my wife died, literally within 24 hours, there was a meeting to plan the church summer fete. She died on the Tuesday, that was the Wednesday.
And were you expected to be at that meeting?
Not only that, I was expected to lead it. I took a funeral on the Thursday and another one on the Friday, and eight more before we actually have my wife's own funeral. The expectation of the church was that because I was a minister, I could handle things like that. And I actually found the greatest of my support came from a couple who were totally unattached to any commitment body whatever. One was a life coach, the other was an astrologer. I could go and share with them all the things I could never share. My other big support group was the local Tai Chi Society, who I'd had the great privilege of selling our church hall to 2 years before. Again, completely outside the community of which I was the acknowledged leader. Because that can sometimes be a very big problem for ministers when they run into personal brick walls. And they need that support. But it's very difficult when you're expected to wear more than one hat.
Absolutely.
In a particular place. Yeah. But it does come. It's just not always. And that's the lovely thing, isn't it, about ministry. It often comes from the most unexpected of directions.
Yes. Thank you for sharing that. And there are support systems available. There is a counselling service available, for example, which I know the URC is part of offering.
And maybe just another way of thinking of it, rather than saying that occasionally you said, if it's the right way to put it, that ministers fail. But how often might it be that it's congregations that fail the minister?
Yeah. And perhaps fail is a funny word, isn't it? Stress-related illness within ministry is significant. Stress-related illness. Now, it's not the only occupation in which it's significant, but it's something that I'm very aware of, is the stress-related issues within ministry. And So finding some way of support, whether it's other ministers or somebody outside of the church, that's great. Any other ways in which you encourage your minister? We've said about encouraging them to go on training courses. We've said about finding support.
Keep them fit by running around.
Making sure they get some exercise.
I just sometimes email him and just say thank you. And
yeah.
Especially perhaps about some particular part of the service which has just sort of fed me in some way. I mean, recently we always have Holy Communion the first Sunday of the month, and I just found myself looking down at this little cube of bread and thinking to hold heaven in the hand, in the palm of your hand. Those words just came to me, and they came from another quite challenging poem. So I looked it up and I just quoted it, because I've seen John grow so much in the last 4 years, from coming from your church in his 50s into a completely new profession.
Yes.
And to watch him mature has been just amazing. And we need to encourage our ministers and tell them that they're doing a jolly good job.
Thank you. Yes. And it's interesting, isn't it? Melanie had, I'm sure you, can I share this about your little Facebook message that you had from this couple? Yeah.
Which one?
The one, the couple that emailed you yesterday.
Married.
The ones that you had married.
Oh, yeah.
What do you want to share?
Just got an email. I married a young couple, sort of vaguely connected to the church, but only very vaguely. And they've got back from their honeymoon, and they Facebooked me basically to say thank you for getting us through the wedding service. It was a lot better and more relaxed than they thought it would be, because there was tensions in their family and really difficult situations, and I'd helped them to get through that very, what should be a celebration, but they were very worried could turn into a family feud. And although I knew I'd got them through it, because they had got through it, to actually get that affirmation was just so valuable.
Yeah. And it doesn't need to be any more than one line, does it? I mean, just one line that says, thank you, that was a lovely service. Or, you know, I've done a funeral service recently for a family. I didn't know them. They'd never been to worship at Park. But they said in their little thank you note, they said, thank you. It was as almost as if you knew Mum personally. And I thought, well, you know, that's such a heartfelt thank you. But it meant such a lot to me that I've been able to be in the right place for them and to be able to lead that service at a very sensitive time. And that was appreciated. So just a little card or a little email, one-liner, really encouraging.
What I've also noticed, sorry, Wendy, I'll come to you in a second. I've also noticed that non-church families respond in a different way. So I've done baptisms recently of a non-church family. I don't even know whether I've mentioned this to Mark, but I got a letter from the grandmother to say thank you. And it was a lovely letter, and in it she put £20. Now, I don't know how many church members would send me an envelope with cash in it. And I wouldn't want to encourage that, and of course it goes into the church funds and all the rest of it. But actually, sometimes I wonder whether, when we're part of the church, we all think it's part of the service, and people without the church realise that actually you're doing something that's very special. Wendy.
And just another very little thing. After the service, if they're caught up with talking to people, make sure they get a cup of coffee and a piece of biscuit or something, so that they're not sort of coming at the end and it's all been packed away. So just thoughtfulness that they're busy and that they probably need sustaining after that.
Yes, thank you. It is such a blessing to worship as a whole family at Park Church. And it's one of Susie's things that she looks out to make sure I've got a cup of coffee.
We're talking about services, Sunday services. The minister works more than one day a week. I'm a minister's wife, you can tell. The minister, as you all know, does more than just the Sunday service and does strange things, like checking the toilet rolls in the loos before the service sometimes.
Some ministers.
All right, some my minister does. It's the hidden things that we need to say thank you for, as well as the obvious upfront stuff.
Now, what Susie hasn't mentioned as well is that, like some ministers, I also have a problem switching off. Switching off is a huge issue because it's a bit like, you know, on your day off as a minister, do you still pray?
I'm thinking more, what's a day off?
I have a wife who makes sure I get a day off. You should get a day off, and you should, but it's really hard to switch off. I don't stop caring about people on my day off or while I'm on holiday. So, you know, even on sabbatical, when I knew there was a wedding of one of the lovely young people in our church, I couldn't get back for. We still prayed for them. We thought of them on that day. And we did actually send a little text message to encourage them. Because it is so hard to switch off. But one of the problems that Susan then finds extremely annoying, and I'm sure she won't mind me sharing this, is that sometimes I'm not actually concentrating on what she's just said. I'm sure no other couple in this room has that issue. I can see them laughing in the background. That's right, you don't have to be a minister, do you? That's right, just encourage Susie with that one. It's not just ministers that have that issue. But I'm sure it happens a lot in households. So it's one of those things to recognise. There are things that go on, which, it's difficult to say thank you for the things that are hidden, because they're hidden. You don't even know it's happened. And the fact that when you get home from holiday after 2 weeks, there's 375 emails to trawl through, some of which are complete rubbish, most of which are complete rubbish, but some of which will need responding to. It's that kind of thing, isn't it? Just being aware. Now, I just wanted to correct one thing that Bob Jackson says. He says a lot of good things, but this quote on the screen was about his experience. The ideal candidate profile for a church that wishes to grow would appear to be young, female, and willing to stay in post for 10 to 12 years. Now, interestingly, the 10 to 12 years is quite common in the literature. A lot of researchers are saying, for a decent length of ministry, 10 to 12 years is ideal for church growth. Bit of a challenge for Methodists that move them on after 7 years. Yeah? But actually, this is what the research has shown. And my personal experience. Took 5 years in Reading to really get to know the community as well as the worshipping. I think the worshipping community I felt I knew after the first year. Took 5 years to get to know the wider community. And 10 to 12 years to begin to see growth. But the issue which this report challenges is the one about being female. David Goodhue's researchers have said it makes no difference whether the minister is male or female. The age does make a difference. It is significant. And there's been some recent figures shown that if your minister is around about the age of 40 plus or 60 plus, you're likely to see growth. Interestingly, that ministers of around the age of 50 plus don't see growth in the same way. I have no idea why. That's just what statistics are showing. Maybe it was to do when they were ordained. I don't know. But that aside, the younger the minister doesn't necessarily mean, but obviously people have got more energy when they're younger, aren't they? They have more energy and are willing to try new things, perhaps. Yes. But willing to stay in post 10 to 12 years is common. I'll just quote a little bit from the book. This is about encouraging ministers. Many clergy do find their roles to be stimulating and joyful. In fact, do you remember that survey on the BBC? The number one job for job satisfaction was being a minister. Minister of religion. Number one job. Can't remember what else was up there. Because I know we teased one or two people in the congregation because accountancy came down about 35. Librarian was quite high. I think librarian was in the top 10. But anyway, number one for job satisfaction was being a minister. Many clergy do find their roles to be stimulating and joyful. The hours may be long, but they are flexible and there are usually no long commuting hassles. Other jobs today are equally stressful. Let's not forget. Nevertheless, it's important to take steps to raise the morale of the workforce and so to raise the effectiveness of the workforce. A joyful, vibrant ministry will be far more effective than a depressed, stressed out one. It's obvious, isn't it? And if we're all ministers, if we're all part of this same body that needs the same encouragement, we all need encouragement. It's not just about ministers, but I thought I would just share with you that it's about nurturing everyone. Oh, that's a command of wealth, isn't it? I will read it to you, don't worry. What it says is, let's take a few more moments. Oh, we haven't got long now. Over coffee, take some moments to think about the nurturing that you've found most helpful. We've already mentioned small groups. We've already mentioned the person that dragged you along to church or invited you along. We may have thought about prayer partners and getting to meet up with someone over coffee, or just that pastoral support that comes when you pop round to visit someone. Think about the things that have helped to nurture you and sustained you on your faith journey. And then think about how you can help and sustain others. And I'd like to leave you with this one challenge, because we're only 30 seconds from coffee. Can you think, you may already have someone that you're nurturing, but is there one person that you could help to grow and develop in their faith? It's how it works, isn't it? We just identified one person that this year we're going to see if we can help them to develop. And if you're a small group leader yourself or a lay preacher, there may be half a dozen people that you're already nurturing. But is there one person in your fellowship or in your neighbourhood or in your family that you're going to particularly pray for this year to help them grow? Let's take that to coffee. Bang on time. Whew. Thank you very much.